welcome back to the Not Alone podcast. You're not alone. We're not alone. And I'm Sam Fredrickson.
We're here together, bud.
We're here together
for now. And I'm Jason Moitoso.
We're here together for now, but we never will
be again. Let's not talk about it.
What? This is our last time.
Ever?
Well.
This is it. We're out of here.
This is our last time recording the podcast.
Sayonara.
In the same room, most likely. Now, there's a chance that when I come back for like holidays, I'll bring the stuff and we'll do like a Christmas show together or something. That'd be fun. But for most of the rest of our relationship, we will be recording over Skype.
No, we can FaceTime.
Well, that's true.
Perfect.
That's true. So
yeah, we'll have to figure out the logistics of that bad boy.
It's been a good 121 episode run thus far. And of course, we're not stopping.
Why would we?
We can't stop because we're not even halfway through telling the story of Aleister Crowley.
I keep going through everything that you send me,
mm-hmm.
and I keep trying to find why he's the beast and basically the Antichrist, and I'm still missing out. Like, I really just want to put on my guy liner paint my nails black, but I'm not getting any of those vibes.
Just imagine I hadn't told you and everybody who didn't know that to begin with, and I just started talking about this person, you would have lost interest three episodes ago. But now you're invested.
I did.
Well, that's true. Now other people are invested
because
they know that Crowley is the great beast. But how does he become that?
It's fair.
That's what we're going to talk about in these next few episodes.
You promise?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to take a minute. But...
Dang it.
So, for anybody who isn't caught up, which is a wild thing to do, to just start on part 5 of a series, bless you. You're fantastic. You'll remember, no, you won't remember, everyone else will remember that last time we ended on a question. And that question was, what if Aleister Crowley wasn't just a big old nerd for magic?
Jason. We all? Sounds like my kind of guy.
What if he was, in all actuality, a spy?
That came out of left field.
Crowley the spy, if you will.
All right. Let's hear it. Why? Why is he a spy?
Now, all the way back in episode 1, we mentioned that Crowley applied to Cambridge.
He's just in Cambridge. He went to Cambridge.
And
you
when
okay?
he did, when he did so with the backing of the Prime Minister. His officially stated goal, as we had mentioned, was to join the diplomatic service. This was also supported by the Secretary to the Admiralty. So he's linked.
Yeah.
Some pretty high up people.
That's one heck of a recommendation letter.
It is. And it really helps to clarify, even just having that information, how and why Crowley knows the people that he does. I mean, we talked about how in the Golden Dawn there were a lot of like social movers and shakers up there, but he is also inextricably connected to government officials as well, as we'll see a little later on. But Crowley and his family, they became linked with the powerful Marquis of Salisbury. There we go. I'm sure that's wrong. Through Alistair's aunt, Annie. Now, Annie had supported the Lord Salisbury in all of his campaigns, from his bid at becoming the parliamentary representative of her home area, all the way up to his campaign for the Prime Minister. And guess what, boys? He did it. He won. He's the big man now, back then in 1890-whatever. He's dead now.
I would hope so.
All will be. Hopefully not too soon. Now, though, through Crowley's interaction with this very powerful man, knew that Crowley's family were patriotic, loyal, and discreet. Thus, albeit unknown to Crowley at the time, he was influenced by Lord Salisbury to attend Trinity. He inceptionized the idea into his head is basically the premise. Now, in reality...
Planted the seed.
Yeah, in reality, he literally, I think, just said, Alistair, you should go to Cambridge and study at Trinity College. But
don't you want to be a Cambridge man?
A Cambridge man.
I assume that's how the conversation went.
Now, once Crowley was there, he made a number of contacts that would help him in his work as a spy, as well as serve as handlers and liaisons for him. One of these, which we'll speak of a little bit more later, was Everard Fielding, who dead set, really committed listeners to the podcast, might ring a bell. Because
yeah, of course it does.
Of course.
Why wouldn't I remember?
We know who Everard Fielding is. He is, or was, the secretary for the Society of Psychical Research in the 20th century. For like 20 years or some crap. It was a long time. And of course, the SPR has been involved in a number of topics that we've covered, from the Highgate Vampire all the way back to our very first episode where we talked about ghosts and apparitions and stuff like that. So they're just kind of a mainstay in this world. And Crowley was in good with
in this world. Yeah, you talk about it like it's a different place.
It is a different place. Things happen very differently.
You're
here.
Right, it's Europe.
Now, 2 years into his time at Trinity, however, this motivated, very intelligent young man made a curious move. Now, Crowley...
But also devious.
Devious in a way. Crowley,
mischievous.
Mischievous. Crowley, during the summer of 1897, he had gotten into basically a habit of climbing the Alps during summer break. However, this year he instead spent the time in St. Petersburg. He claimed the reason for this was to improve his Russian. This Russian, you may remember, would later manifest in how he interacted with people when he rented his flat in London. He was Count Shvarov, and he supposedly pretended to be a Russian count so everybody he could see how everybody treated a Russian count as opposed to a British aristocrat or a British punk with aristocratic tendencies and ideals, which is, of course, a terrible... It's a very stupid reason to do such a thing, just like it's a very stupid reason to say that he went all the way to St. Petersburg just to study Russian. Because he didn't. See,
wait, did he not? Is that just made up, or...
Well, he did. He went to St. Petersburg. But I highly doubt it was simply a, oh, let's go there to learn the language over like a
month.
It
was to be a spy.
It was to be a spy. You see, this trip occurred during very tense time between the UK and Russia, with espionage taking place in full force on both sides. It has been suggested that Crowley's role at this point was his first mission in foreign intelligence, something which he had alluded to being involved in his biographies, but was never really established as fact until decades later. Because, of course, you can't just read his biographies and trust he's telling the truth, because he just doesn't do that.
You mean his autobiography, got it.
His autohagiography. But his mission, most likely, was simply to keep an ear out on the ground in order to get a feeling for what the common person thought of of the situation in Russia, which was still under the control of the Romanov dynasty, although after 300 years, the tides were finally beginning to turn. Now, he returned home and would spend just one more year at Cambridge before moving on to the period of life that we just covered, his involvement in and the eventual destruction of the Golden Dawn. Now, you'll recall that it was the following November, right after this trip, November of 1898, or wait, was it that November? Okay, no, it was a year and then it was two Novembers later. After
your
this
timeline
trip,
is all
I'm
wacky,
all,
isn't
dude,
it?
Dude, it sucks. Researching Crowley sucks. Everything's everywhere all the time and nobody dates anything. It's awful. It's awful. So a year, 15 months later.
Okay, you recovered
so,
quick.
Thanks, bud. Crowley joins the Golden Dawn. And while the man himself, through his memoirs and autobiographies, has created a plausible story as to why he joined the Golden Dawn, there is another possibility beyond simply the desire to seek knowledge and magical power.
I think that in itself is its own...
It's its own reward.
Yeah, that's the reason why you do it.
You would think so. But in reality, I would argue that it's possible, if not probable, if not almost certain, that Aleister Crowley was sent not to join the Dawn, but to destroy it.
What?
Not due to its magical or occult connections, because who cares about that? It's not real anyway. But because of its political leanings. Because all things in life can sadly be reduced to politics.
Yeah, it basically is just like a high society club,
mm-hmm.
in all actuality.
Yes.
Makes me sad.
It does. There is no magic in the world. I don't necessarily believe that, but it's possible. Now, it all goes back to two different aspects of Crowley's upbringing that we mentioned in our first episode. Legitimism and the Celtic Church, the latter of which was part of a nationwide Celtic revival. Now, we had mentioned that Crowley was a self-professed Jacobite who was also a Protestant. And we had mentioned how the Jacobites supported the Catholic claim to the throne, basically.
Right.
Crowley hates the Catholics, but he's still a Jacobite. He's still legitimate. So it's a very strange thing for a person to be. We talked about that. You could go back to episode 1 if you forgot. Now,
will do.
The Celtic revival, though, which is how he got really introduced into this Jacobite cause, was through the Celtic Church. The Celtic revival breathed life into another philosophy as well, known as Fenianism. Fenianism can be explained by its core tenets. One, that Ireland has a natural right to independence, and two, that this right can only be won by an armed revolution. Fenianism grew out of the Acts of Union of 1800, which dissolved Ireland as an independent land under British rule and formed the Kingdom of Great Britain and Ireland. Now, this was before the formation of Northern Ireland, which is, as we know the UK today to be, the Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. Because, in a big part, almost exclusively, of the Fenians. They succeeded in a way. Not all the way, but a good amount. Now, Crowley, this paradox of being isolated from all these groups, because he kind of fits here, but he doesn't fit there. He doesn't necessarily fit into the Fenian resistance, because they as well were strongly associated with Catholicism. But they also, of course, fit in with a distrust to the British crown, which he was all about because he was a legitimist, but he claims he wasn't because he says he's a patriot at another point.
You really have to be blind to certain aspects to like go the route that he has.
Yes, yes. You literally just have to say, and to Crowley's credit, I do believe that he was this kind of person where he just said, I'm here to learn and know everything I can, and so I'm going to join everything that I can to learn everything that I can, because we'll see him do that later with religion, right. Basically. And well, he already has to a point. So we have a Crowley who has at least some sort of Fenian tendencies, virulently anti-Catholic, virulently Jacobite, and extremely patriotic. These things can't coexist.
They're all wild, yeah.
They just don't happen. However, when we look at the Golden Dawn...
Unless, like,
yeah,
he has some weird, warped perception of what, like, UK and Scotland is and what it should be.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, then, like, he has his own idealistic...
He's loyal to his idea of the UK, but not the actual UK.
Right.
That could be. That, and I think that would make a lot of sense.
That would, like... write off a lot of the issues.
Yes.
And how I would structure things.
Yes. I think the biggest thing is just how much he hated the Catholics. And
right.
He hated the Catholics. And it's just strange that that would be like his...
defining keystone.
No, but his vehicle for creating the Britain that he wants is to reinstall a Catholic monarch.
I mean, we talked about Sims 4 not too long ago. That was like his... His behavioral background is hates Catholics.
There you go.
Likes rubber duckies. I don't know.
I love it. Now, here's the thing about Crowley. If he was going to be a spy, which I would say that pretty much the only reason he was all of those things at once is because he was actually a spy underneath them. If he was going to be a spy...
So then did he have, like, different personas when he was in those different groups?
Maybe. He was, by all means, like, quite, like, hoity-toity and, like, very snobbish, as we've seen over and over again. He obviously liked to pretend to be different people because right. of the whole Count Zvaroff thing.
Well, that and, like, his private life doesn't seem to really exist outside these different organizations and groups.
No, they are his private life. Other than, as he was wont to do...
And he kind of goes from one to one just in a linear succession. Like, mm-hmm. he doesn't necessarily stick with any one particular group yes. for the longevity of his, at least for right now, his young adulthood.
Whatever he's doing just that. And then once he's done doing that, he's done doing that. He doesn't do it anymore.
He's on to the next.
He's on the next thing. Other than, as Crowley was wont to do, walking around the corner and finding anybody, dear God, anybody who would have sex with him, the only people that he interacted with were part of the Golden Dawn. Well, really, at this point, part of the Golden Dawn.
Right.
Just that. Other than his college mates. But again, the problem is, if we're going to say that Crowley was a spy mm-hmm. at this time, the biggest problem was...
When did he get his training?
Well, that's a good... We're gonna get,
that's another
we're
question.
Gonna get, we're going to get there. Don't worry. We're almost... Okay. We're getting there. He was simply, upon entering Trinity College at Cambridge, altogether too respectable to be a spy.
On paper?
And in reality. At this point, other than getting it on, he really didn't have much
right, just
deviance
his,
in him.
Debauchery.
Yeah, he was a college kid, basically. That was it. And he, like, maybe read some spell books. But probably not even then, by the time he entered Cambridge. See, the spy master in charge of Scotland at this time, not Scotland, Scotland Yard, their special branch at this time was one man named William Melville, known as M, just like in James Bond, M, which is something else the coronavirus has stolen from me. James Bond, because they had to push the movie back.
Oh.
I could be watching it in like a week. For anyone who doesn't know, James Bond is one of my favorite things in the world.
Why?
I freaking love James Bond. I don't know, because here's the thing. I'm not a big fan of violence. I hate, like, womanizing. Spy work doesn't really interest me.
And it's all three of those
all
things
three of
culminated
those,
in one.
Kind of just the same way that Crowley was.
Just
I also
played too
am
much
a walking...
GoldenEye back in the day. Is that it?
That's probably it. So anyway, yeah. So in James Bond, the head of MI5 is always M, or at least his division of MI5 or whatever. But this was before MI5, and all the spies were handled by the spy master at Scotland Yard, William Melville. Now, the typical policy of spycraft before M's tenure there was to utilize diplomats in order to conduct espionage. But M decided to employ seedy members of society, people too outrageous to be considered spies. This is interesting because, again, if Crowley was being groomed for spy work, diplomacy would have been what he went into. And you would have thought that he would become a diplomat, an ambassador somewhere, a very respectable person. But he literally becomes a debauched crazy man. So when we look at the way Melville made his spies, one such example was a man named Sidney George Reilly, who was later known as the Ace of Spies. He was a Russian revolutionary that was rescued by Melville and groomed by him and would later go on to become a quadruple agent.
So wait, what side did he end up on?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I'm sure it's a very fascinating story, but I was just like, that's interesting. I have to move on. I'm sorry. He was working for four powers at once.
How do you keep that straight?
I don't know.
That's impressive.
That is impressive. But he was a poor...
Especially for a revolutionary.
Yeah.
You would think it'd be a little different.
He was just a poor dude at the time, caught up in the wrong things, and instead of leaving him to die, Melville took him. He
kidnapped him?
I don't know exactly how it happened.
We're not sure.
I wouldn't be surprised. He constituted a departure from this idea of the respectable spy and instead figured out that people are going to suspect diplomats as spies, because why wouldn't they? If you're in Russia and there's...
You'd rather have someone that blends into the background.
Yeah, you're in Russia. Like, there's
a tight-lipped dinner party.
There's one British guy at your dinner party, and then suddenly everything you talked about gets back to the British government. Of course, it was the ambassador.
Well, I mean, then you just, you know, off him.
Okay.
Right? I mean, like...
James Bond. But not Herman Melville.
Nope.
William Melville decided... Again, that the best thing is not to have somebody who was a respectable heir to a large fortune studying for the diplomatic service to become a spy, but rather a completely sex-deprived maniac attempting to summon angels and demons to do his bidding. Crowley, later reflecting on his time in the pursuit of the secret chiefs,
right,
would say this, quote, "But who are they? Since they are invisible and inaccessible, may they not simply be figments invented by a self-styled master, not quite sure of himself to prop his tattering authority? Well, the invisible and inaccessible criticism may equally be leveled at Captain A and Admiral B of the Naval Intelligence Department. These secret chiefs keep in the dark for precisely the same reasons, and these qualities disappear instantaneously the moment they want to get a hold of you," unquote. That's one of just a handful of smatterings where Crowley kind of says, I might have been a spy, but who knows?
Cool.
And of course, if he was a spy and he told anyone about it, he would be killed. You had the Official Secrets Act on the books.
Here's the thing. Given what we know about this egotistical maniac, would he not just say he was a spy?
That's exactly. Exactly.
Would he not?
And
I
yet,
mean, that sounds like something he would say to get someone else in bed.
A respectable man becomes a maniac obsessed with sex and magic. Who would believe that this man was a spy? I think and that's the thing, is that I think that Crowley played this part so well that he ended up changing the world when in reality he may not have believed in any of this. It's possible he believed in it. And I think as we go on, there's good evidence that he believed in some of it. But I think the majority of what he did was all just to create this persona. And he created that persona very well.
Do you think he just became too invested into it and it just actually became him?
Maybe. Yeah. A very like Heath Ledger playing the Joker sort of situation.
Sure.
Except it ends with a totally different ending.
Real method there.
Yeah. Real method actor Crowley was.
Why else would you go to mountaintops but to peer down at what's below?
True. And as we'll see as we kind of walk forward
through... Most good spy films have mountains.
That's true. They do. And usually like a lair in a side of a mountain. So that, I think, makes sense. Crowley was not actually mountain climbing. He was going to a secret spy lair. Yeah, that makes sense.
It's so much cooler, too.
As we'll see, Crowley is a person who, wherever he steps, about a year or two later, havoc follows, if even that long. So, the progression that...
We're just associating any bad thing to happen after Crowley goes to a place is attributed to Crowley?
Yes, because I believe it is.
Okay.
Not because of this whole coincidence thing, but just follow me on this, okay? We'll see. I'm not going to go into all of it now, because basically from here on out, what I want to do is whenever we're talking about Crowley's life, just kind of weave in the spycraft into it. So
we'll do our best.
We'll just see what we can do. Now, the progression, one could make the argument from, again, respectable boy from a respectable but strict family to demon worshiper.
He's not there yet.
No, he's not, but
he hasn't even gotten there yet.
Well, kind of, depending on your school of thought, was an identity construction necessary for his role as an infiltrator, an espionage term for one who embeds themselves within a suspicious group to act as a double agent. Now, when we look at the years of life of Crowley's life between entering Trinity and the fracturing of the Golden Dawn, a compelling alternative portrait proceeds. There's an interesting turning point in Crowley's life, which we've not mentioned previously. In his journal, there's a reference to an event on New Year's Eve, 1896, just months after Crowley comes into his massive inheritance, which, of course, is what prompts him to buy that book about witchcraft, which then prompts everything else, basically. And what he says in his journal is that he enters the Military Order of the Temple in Stockholm. He states, quote, "I was awakened to the knowledge that I possessed a magical means of becoming conscious and satisfying a part of my nature which had up to that moment concealed itself from me." Now, the plain meaning of this is unclear. One biographer claimed that this was a record of Crowley's first homosexual encounter, which would be an important component of his own magical system that he would create, Thelema, after fracturing the Golden Dawn, which we are going to get to, I promise. Others claim that it was a sort of enlightenment, which was facilitated by his natural curiosity around the taboo and the occult. Yet a plausible explanation is that this is the first time that Crowley would become associated in intelligence work in any way. And the main reason for this is that Crowley made a very big deal and worked very hard to get a passport right before his departure to Stockholm. But he didn't need one. You did not need a passport, if you were a British citizen, to enter Sweden at this time. But it was absolutely necessary to go from Sweden into Russia. So, the idea is, as well as Russian-controlled Finland, the idea is that Crowley, at this point, I don't even know what that would be, 2 years, a year and a half or so before he joins the Dawn, gets contacted or goes through some sort of initiation into the spycraft world that mirrors his initiation into the magical way of thinking. Because it's after this experience that he comes home and starts to be obsessed with the occult. It really comes out of nowhere, other than this plausible, like, I was a child and my father was super religious and he can, and then my uncle was super religious and I'm just doing this to rebel against them. Other than that, which is plausible, but I do know a vast amount of people who had horrific upbringings due to religion who are not Satanists. So who knows? It pretty much just comes out of left field after this event. Whatever this initiation into the order of the military order of the temple is.
Okay. So we'll go with it. I mean... Travel's probably easier with a passport, but
maybe.
Well, what other identification do they have at the time?
I have no idea. I don't know what you need. Neither. All I know is that you don't need a passport.
Well, then.
Now, the next 2 years of Crowley's life were the most formative in especially this character creation that he went through. He devoured occult text. He reached out to A.E. Waite, who just happened to be a member of the Golden Dawn without him knowing about it. He talked about alchemy in the earshot of another member of the Golden Dawn who he didn't happen to know about, coincidentally, which was Baker. And then, through Baker, was introduced to Jones, who was another member of the Golden Dawn, who invited him into the Golden Dawn.
So, previously, when I was like, oh, he just stumbles into good things that he's looking for.
Yeah.
No.
No, he doesn't.
He's been planted there.
Again, his official narrative, he buys this book, the Book of Black Magic and Pacts or whatever, written by Waite. He is intrigued by Rosicrucianism, writes to Waite, who tells him to read, what was it, The Cloud Upon the Sanctuary. At that point, he makes an act of will, which is basically a prayer, to the sacred chiefs in order to be sent a teacher. And that teacher is, through Baker, through Jones, Mathers, basically, McGregor, right. Mathers. So yes, the other idea is that they said, hey, spy man Crowley, this guy, A.E. Waite, is connected with this weird organization. Problem is, you can't just walk up and say, I want to be a part of it. So figure out how to handle that. What
interesting
is the
here.
Possibility that he does not know these are all part of the same very small group of people in this very new, relatively new organization? If he really wanted to get into the mysteries, he could have gone to the Society of Rosicrucianism in England. He could have joined the Freemasons.
Right.
Why but he one? Ends up in the Dawn. Hello from Washington, everybody. It's Sam with the mid-show break. Real quick here, before I go ahead and read out some of these names and say some thank yous, I just wanted to thank everybody who's reached out to me in the last week or two to see how this move went. I really, really appreciate it. Yeah, we're all fine over here. We're all settled in and hunkered down and waiting until life gets back to normal. So, thanks for your concern. And on that back to normal note, we are still keeping our Patreon open and available for everybody. I'll probably do it until at least May 5th. That's when Washington's stay-at-home order lifts. So, if this is all over by then, great. If not, we'll just figure that out. But if you can hear some dogs barking in the background, that's not Baron, who's doing great. After his surgery, that is some of the neighbor's dogs. So that'll be fun to figure out how to work with from here on out. But in any case, there's a few people I want to mention by name and thank them for supporting the show. One of them is an individual, a young man named Brendan, who is a big fan of the show, who had a birthday near the end of March. I think it was the 30th. Happy birthday, Brendan. Thanks for supporting the show, my good man. We also would like to thank everyone who has become a patron in the last few weeks, and especially, not more so than anybody else, but especially just the fact that when I announced that we were going to take the patron-specific stuff and make it available to everybody, I completely anticipated, A, not getting any new patrons until coronavirus is over, A, B, or I guess subpoint A, because obviously times are tight right now, so I completely understand. But B, I was even anticipating losing some patrons. To my knowledge, I don't think we've lost anybody since we opened it up and since in conjunction with this freaking pandemic. So that's just amazing. But especially thank you to everybody who, even though you have full access to all of the stuff, you're still choosing to donate. So we'd like to thank Sticky Sound Zine. We'd like to thank Eric Miller. We'd like to thank Elise Bischoff. We'd like to thank Mac Deal, Christopher Hodge, Logan, and Emily Boob. We'd like to thank you all so much for your donations, for your patronage. Because of the move, we've been a little behind on getting those thank you cards and stickers out, but they are still available for all of our patrons, and I'll be getting back to normal on these this week or next week as soon as we finally get everything kind of unpacked and ready to go. So the last group of people we'd like to thank are those who took the time to go on iTunes and leave us a 5-star review or a 5-star rating with a review. So we'd just like to thank Gert McDirt, Shoop Dog, Random Fandom Badger, and Marine Cowgirl. Interesting. We're going to read that one. They say, Jason and Sam are your hosts for a fun and skeptical journey through a range of strange topics. But instead of briefly bringing up a topic each week, glossing through, and moving on, they are not afraid to spend multiple episodes breaking down a topic, which is extremely clear from this being the 5th Crowley episode, and there being, oh, I don't know, 5 more? 4 more? We'll just have to see. From cryptids to poltergeists to mysterious legends and infamous historical accounts, not alone does all the research on those strange topics you always told yourself you were going to look up. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Marine Cowgirl. I was just saying to my wife last night, one of my goals with the podcast is to say, you know what? This sounds interesting. I know people think this is interesting. I'm going to be the one to go out and learn all this stuff, spend the time researching, and then give it to you. Here you are. This is what I've found. So I'm glad that's what's coming across. In any case, guys, thanks so much for your support, especially during this crazy time, not only of the pandemic, but of the big move, figuring everything out, trying to adapt to a new way of life. We are here for you. We love you. If there's anything we can do for you, feel free to reach out to notalonepodcast@gmail.com. Yeah, let's go ahead. We'll get back to the show. But why focus on the dawn? If this is correct, if this idea is correct, and Crowley devoted years to ruining his social standing in order to be admitted into the Golden Dawn, there must have been something more than it just being a weird occult society. Because again, why would the government care about guys dressing up pretending to be wizards? It doesn't make any sense.
Right. Well, again, these are already people from high society.
Yes, they were people from high society, but people from high society were involved in at least those two other organizations right. I had mentioned.
Other things, too.
The Freemasons, the Rosicrucianism. Now, the Maybe Dawn... Maybe
it's to squash the new kid on the block.
Oh, interesting. So you think that the government is backing these other organizations and doesn't want this one coming up?
I'm saying
up?
The government was already found, like... They're the people in the government
has been infiltrated by Freemasons.
Correct.
I agree.
Correct.
It's possible. All the above. It's possible. But if that was the case, especially given the fact that all three of the founding members were Master Masons.
Ah, shoot.
This would have occurred, I think, long before this.
Well, because the Dawn had been around. Did they depart from the Freemason society?
Mathers did, remember. Mathers right. basically left. The other ones, what was his name?
Because I'm assuming you just don't leave
no,
that
you
kind
don't.
Of organization.
You're still in. But I think Mathers was just an incendiary person who they were like, all right, get out of here. But the other guy, remember, he went back and continued to be the head of the SRIA, whose members were exclusively Master Masons. You couldn't get in if you weren't a Master Mason.
Right.
So... The Dawn had been around for 10 years at this point as well, but it was only recently, relatively within the last few years, that the Scottish Wizard King, MacGregor Mathers, Mathers MacGregor, whatever, ascended to be the sole head of the organization.
Okay.
Another interesting member that we've mentioned before is W.B. Yeats. His name is not Yeats. Somebody reached
Dang
out.
Dang it.
I know. I wanted it to be. But Yeats. By gaining access to the Golden Dawn, Crowley immediately came in contact with these two people, MacGregor Mathers and W.B. Yeats, who were, in essence, figureheads for the Fenian cause and the cause of the Jacobites. They were both heavily involved, in these two different organizations that the British Crown wanted to make sure did not get any more traction than they already had. And if you don't believe me, just read his frickin' diary. Because as we've mentioned, legitimists weren't only concerned with the Jacobite cause. Rather, the Jacobites are a subsection of legitimists. Now, there's another subsection known as the Carlists, who were in Spain. They were supporters of Don Carlos, another pretender to the Spanish throne. I'm definitely not going to go into the politics of 19th century Spain here, but it was a bit of a mess.
But we are.
And suffice to say, there was a war fought over this one, too. And Don Carlos, the Count of Molina, and his descendants were pretenders to the Spanish throne. Now, it appeared as though Crowley, quite quickly, almost right off the bat after joining the Golden Dawn, became embroiled with the Carlist conspiracy. He claimed to have received commissioning and training to operate a machine gun on behalf of the legitimists as they attempted a coup in Spain.
Well, I mean, if someone offers you a machine gun, do you turn them down?
You take it. You take it. Now,
in the proper training.
Of course.
Okay.
No, you definitely turn them down. In summer of 1899...
I screwed that one up on the test.
Aleister Crowley boarded a ship loaded with legitimists and firearms. 3,664 guns that were meant to be used in a glorious revolution and takeover of the throne.
Okay, what happened to all the guns? They jam?
That would be ironic and wild. If he could sabotage over 3,000 guns yeah. with no one noticing. No, it was a little bit easier than that. But really quick.
He just blew up the boat.
The guns came from Germany, purchased by a legitimist named Bertrand Ashbraham. Lord Ashbraham had also provided significant land on his estate as a military training ground and was one of the leading Jacobites in the country at the time. And
Son of
he
a gun.
Was also closely connected to MacGregor Mathers, who was known to be in Germany purchasing firepower around this same time. Now, Mathers was in close contact with another legitimist, a man named Henry Jenner, who bankrolled a Jacobite magazine. While Mathers translated ancient magical manuscripts in the British Library, where you had to translate, it was, you have to do it there. You can't take them and go, sort of a deal. Guess who was the librarian? This guy, this Henry Jenner, who was not, he was bankrolling this Jacobite publication. And you'll remember that one of the main reasons that the Golden Dawn imploded, one of the main reasons that the Golden Dawn imploded was because Mathers simply refused to do the work that his patron, Annie Horniman, wanted him to, but spent too much time working on ancient manuscripts and then performing rituals that he found in them or pieced together from them. It's been suggested that the real reason that the Golden Dawn imploded the first time and was held up by such shoddy sticks once Horniman left and they rebelled the first time is because MacGregor Mathers was spending all of his time working on legitimist causes and not on the Golden Dawn itself. So instead of seeing him as a magician with political leanings, I think it is more appropriate to see him as a politician or a political dissident with magical leanings instead.
Okay, so
now, before the gun running operation for the Carlist cause could be completed, someone alerted the authorities. The Crown came and took all of the guns away and arrested most of the people on the boat. But who did they not arrest?
The British gentleman,
Aleister Crowley. Why would that be?
Because he showed them magic tricks.
I will invoke a demon if you let me go. And if you don't, I'll invoke too.
Puff of smoke.
It's proven
runs
that
away.
Crowley is on the ship, A, from his own memoirs, but as I said, you can't trust anything he says. But there is another... There is...
Some sort of documentation that places
documentation from the ship, a register that said, see Alexander. And of course... Crowley's real first name? Alexander. So he was a spy. Almost guaranteed.
C, as in like C period Alexander?
C dot Alexander, yeah. Which is something that he signed into other places
as well.
We yes.
This right. was I a, was like, this is...
This was a known... Well, even
up
if
until
not...
this point, this had like better strings than a lot of the UFO reports that we looked at.
Very true.
Like... Conspiracy-wise, you got me on the hook, which doesn't happen frequently. So I'm going to let this one ride a little bit more.
So to me, it's almost undeniable that Crowley, regardless of his personal feelings regarding magic itself, was using his membership in the Dawn to destabilize its organization, or to destabilize the organization due to its Jacobite and Fenian
links. But wait, when did
links.
He go to Spain? This timeline is...
It's 1899.
It's still 1899.
Yeah. That's when he went to Spain.
Okay. This is after he bought the home on Loch Ness, right? Because with all this, like, going back in time to college years, to different points.
Mm-hmm.
Now talking about these guns that got seized while he's mysteriously there.
So Crowley,
I'm really confused why he's in Spain.
Crowley joined... Well, he's in Spain because he's part of the coup.
Why?
He's in Spain specifically to do this.
Oh.
It's a secret mission that he's doing.
No, but like...
It's not like he went to Spain to live there or have a holiday. He went to Spain to overthrow the government. It failed, and he went back home.
Yeah, but what I mean is... Wait, did he not sabotage the revolutionaries?
Yes. As one of the revolutionaries.
Okay. So
are you following?
Yes, because of his connection with Mather. Okay. Yeah, I got it.
So, interestingly enough, Crowley moved to Boleskine just a few months after this.
Okay. So it's almost like he went in hiding.
Yes, because if you'll remember, there were some sort of vague reports that there were the police were trying to catch up to him for something, and again, we all thought it was just homosexual activity, but it could have been something else.
Questioning of other activities?
Yes. Something deeper. Something different.
And then he goes and becomes an official aristocrat.
Yes. Well, yeah. By buying Bolskine, he becomes a lord. A laird.
Right.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like a great way to hide.
If anything, I feel like... Melville's...
Lordship probably has documentation.
Melville's philosophy when it came to spies was, do not try to hide them. If you try to hide them, they will stick out like a sore thumb.
That makes sense.
Anyone who sticks out like a sore thumb cannot be a spy.
Because they're attracting too much attention to themselves.
They are spies. It's brilliant.
I mean,
as I'm sure we can tell.
All right. So where does that take us now?
Where that takes us now is that after this, Crowley comes back, buys Bolskine. Right after he buys Bolskine, or right before, or something about all of this, the Golden Dawn implodes on itself, in a big part exacerbated by Crowley because he kept backing Mathers even when he shouldn't have, and he kept poking the temple until it finally had to sever all relations with him. And then, for someone who was so passionately indebted to the study of magic under MacGregor Mathers and the Golden Dawn, he just drops it like it's a freaking rock and leaves.
Well, it's all used up now. Did he get a new toy? He wants to play something else?
Maybe. Or maybe he did very well at his assignment and he proved that he was ready to work outside of the country.
Where does he go?
He goes to Mexico.
That's not Russia.
No, it's not Russia. I know.
But he learned Russian.
Maybe. I don't know if he actually knew Russian.
He played a Russian count.
Yeah, sure.
Why is he going to another continent, not just going to Russia?
Why would he go to Russia?
Because
he already finished what he'd been theoretically working in and out of Russia for like the last 3 to 4 years at this point. So maybe he was ready for something different.
Yeah, now he's established there.
Maybe. Or maybe he got burned.
Okay.
Spy games.
So we're off to Mexico.
We're off to Mexico. Let me just make sure.
Where you do need a passport.
You do need a passport, and he had a passport, and that was fine.
That's right.
Now,
because he thought ahead.
Regardless.
Got it months earlier than what he actually needed it for.
Regardless of spycraft and violent takeovers of the government, one thing is absolutely certain, which is that Crowley, although he abandoned the Dawn, did not abandon magic. But he was forced to take a break, a brief respite. Where do you go on vacation? Mexico, as we have mentioned. But before that, he goes back to
Cancun?
Paris.
Oh.
He meets with Mathers. Basically, he loses faith in Mathers. According to his official writings, his autobiographies, at that point he says, this guy's a fake. He's a fraud. I can't do this anymore. And so he leaves. And after this, in anything that Crowley writes,
Mathers?
He just dies in Paris like a weirdo.
Okay.
He's just a weirdo who dies in Paris.
All right.
After this, Crowley writes very just not flatteringly about Mathers.
Makes sense.
Of course, during all of this, Crowley is like writing a lot of poetry and some books and stuff. And he just wrote all the time. But yeah, he and Mathers definitely had a big falling out. And Crowley felt like he lost his connection, his chance to meet the chiefs. But the only thing that he was able to do, potentially, was to perform the operation of Abra Mellon in order to gain his own access directly to the secret chiefs. However, the operation states that it is necessary that it be started on or right before Easter. And Crowley had missed the boat, as it were, on that.
Well, in that case, what do you do for a year?
You go to Mexico, as I've alluded to three times without actually going there. So let's go there. In mid-July, Crowley arrives in New York and begins bitching immediately.
I mean,
it's astounding how fast this man can complain about everything around him.
It's the one thing I truly understand about him.
Now, after 3 days, he travels directly to Mexico City. Now, what he was upset about in New York was the heat. And then he goes to Mexico City, where he's even more upset about the heat.
Yeah, you think it's probably warmer.
Probably. And, unfortunately, Crowley's... Okay, so this is what he says. He says, quote, "The city of Mexico began by irritating me intensely. The hotel had no organized service. They didn't seem to care whether or not anyone ate. In fact, in the whole city, there was only one restaurant where one could get anything outside the regular local dishes. Nobody bothers about eating. The same applies to drinking, as far as the palate is concerned. People ate to satisfy hunger and drank to get drunk. There were no fine vintages," unquote. In Mexico City.
Yeah, I mean, if you're not drinking to get drunk, I don't know what you're doing.
Crowley essentially sounds like a person who goes all the way to Rome just to eat at the Hard Rock Cafe, which is something that we did, or we tried to do, but the Hard Rock Cafe was too busy. So then we were forced to eat at a local, authentic Italian restaurant.
I don't understand you.
I don't either.
Okay.
If I had to do it again when I wasn't 18, I would do it very differently.
If you say so.
But now, upon settling in Mexico, Crowley begins to become acquainted with a Freemason named Don Jesus Medina, who initiated him into the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry.
Okay.
He rapidly progresses to the 33rd degree because he's just so good at magic. Also part of this organization of the Freemasons, which he supposedly, I guess, had a problem with before. Because if he didn't have a problem with them, why didn't he join them first? Again, they're like the entry point to all of these organizations, and yet he avoided them the entire time.
Staring at him right in the face.
The entire time. Until
it wasn't a part of his assignment.
Exactly. Until he
meets
Don
Jesus. Because he wasn't good enough to infiltrate an organization such as the Freemasons.
Or because the Freemasons in England were already very infiltrated, as you've pointed out. By high members of society.
Oh, that's fair, I guess.
Yes.
Loose lips.
Now, in Mexico, one very important member of the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry was the dictator of Mexico, Porfirio Diaz, who would later go on, like a year after this, to award oil rights for the majority of Mexican oil to the British shortly after Crowley's departure. It is not unlikely that Crowley's movements in Mexico, because of their terrible backstory, the idea that he went to climb volcanoes but really didn't do too much of that, were further intelligence operations.
What?
Again,
volcanoes?
He enters the Golden Dawn, leaves the Golden Dawn, and it fractures. He enters Mexico, leaves Mexico, and suddenly Mexico's awarding all of their oil rights to the British. Interesting. After he goes out of his way to join a secret society. One that he had complete and total access to before, and in theory should have been the most interested in.
And also probably the one he had easiest access to,
yes,
as well, given his connections.
Yes, but he waits until he's on a different continent to do it.
Well, he was heartbroken, Sam.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
Okay.
His previous venture of everything that he was putting his soul into ended up being a sham, which is why he had to run away.
That makes sense. Just like me. Leaving this state forever. Maybe. We'll
see. Keep saying things like that.
Now, Crowley did more than work, if work indeed he did, while he was in Mexico. In fact, Crowley was authorized by Mathers, despite his lack of confidence in the man, to establish an offshoot of the Dawn in Mexico, which he did, and he called it the Lamp of the Invisible Light, or L-I-L, which was almost certainly a Kabbalistic reference.
So wait, he's still in communication with Mathers at this time, then?
He was in communications because right before he went to New York, he was in Paris. So theoretically, as they were in Paris, he said, I'm going to Mexico. And Mathers said, okay, go start an organization. I don't know that at this point, and again, this is just taking Crowley's word for it, that this is how it happened.
Yeah.
I don't know that at this point Mathers understands and realizes that Crowley knows that he's a faker and a
gotcha.
Farce.
Yeah. A fraud.
Yeah. He might think that he's still in charge.
Legit. Okay.
And again, we found that these secret societies are a great way to attract the powerful and the upper class. And so
right,
potentially,
because they have all this free time.
Yes. And so potentially, instead of setting up another chapter of the Golden Dawn for magic's sake, he set it up so that at any point they could send operatives there to be connected to the right people, even if those people
right.
didn't know that's what was happening.
Okay.
He initiated Don Jesus as the high priest of the order, and Crowley spent about 6 months sightseeing and engaging in magical ritual in Mexico before he even comes close to a mountain. Before he even licks a mountain. He says...
Does he lick mountains now?
You know he did.
Oh, dear.
He's a freak. So he just kind of hangs out, does around. During this time, though, he claims to have attempted some of the advanced magic that he had gained access to through his initiation, no matter how brief his tenure, into the inner order of the Golden Dawn itself. One such spell was invisibility.
Now, yes.
Crowley did not believe that he was able to turn physically invisible, but rather psychically invisible, as if wrapped from head to toe in the psychic paper from Doctor Who. Did you ever watch Doctor Who?
No.
Of course you didn't. In Doctor Who, the doctor has a piece of paper that when they're like, who are you? And he's like, I'm a cop. That's how he sounds. Hey, I'm a cop. He pulls out the psychic paper and it says like, I'm a cop.
Or it's if just they're a like, Jedi mind trick.
It's basically a Jedi mind trick on paper, which is exactly what Crowley is going for here.
Okay, I'm following.
So he claims that he was able to do this because he walked down the streets of Mexico City in a scarlet robe while wearing a golden crown without anybody paying any attention to him at all. Now, of course, this was probably, if it happened at all, simply people being polite.
Look at that wackadoodle.
Just keep walking, Maria. Just keep walking. It's fine. But beyond that, it's probable, if not possible, that this was in fact a coded reference to his actual work of flagrantly bursting through 33 degrees of separation between himself and the most powerful man in Mexico to pave the way for the British takeover of Mexican oil. That's true invisibility.
Wait. How did he do that? How did he structure what?
Because he ascended to the 33rd degree
right, masonry, so fast. Okay.
So the fact that he was able... Remember when he was in the Golden Dawn?
Yeah.
And he like was bursting through stuff? Mm-hmm. They were like, you need to slow down. There are rules about this. And that's what made a lot of people suspicious about him. Here, he's just like, poof! He's at the top in no time.
Okay.
And nobody thinks about anything. Oh, yeah.
Weird.
Yes. That's what I'm saying.
Now I'm understanding.
That's why he's a spy and why invisibility is not invisibility. It's being embedded in an organization.
Okay.
Like in The Departed.
Okay, I'm following.
DiCaprio was invisible in that for a good amount of time.
Right.
This would be a good idea for a movie title, like The Invisibles, and it's all about spies who like infiltrate organizations.
Maybe not that title.
Okay.
But the premise, I understand.
The Invisible Men.
Let's shelf it for a bit.
Okay,
bud.
That's fine. It's fine. Now,
I want some black magic here, man.
It has also been posited that the LIL, the Lamp of Invisible Light, was in fact, if not another spy operation, in fact, another Carlist or legitimate cell set up through McGregor, or set up through Aleister Crowley by McGregor Mathers in the Americas should a need arise. So he is really playing the double agent card quite well. Now, there are a number of documents recording authentic spells and rituals for the LIL, but out of these documents, there are 12 pages torn out of Crowley's notebook. So, what's on those pages?
I don't know, Sam. What are on the pages?
Spy stuff.
Okay, makes sense to me.
Now, Crowley claims that the reason he wasted 6 months dinking around is because he was waiting for his companion, Oscar Eckenstein, who was a visionary in the field of mountaineering, being, among other things, the inventor of the modern crampon. They were also probably lovers.
Do you say probably because Crowley, like, wrote about it, or...
I don't know why just... I said probably. I'm actually pretty sure it's confirmed because okay. He wrote about it.
Okay.
It's been a long time of reading a lot of things, and it's not stopping or getting better. Now, the pair went climbing for a little bit, and Eckenstein encouraged Crowley to stop wasting his time on magic and mysticism and instead put his mind to use.
In spy work.
Yes. Maybe. Or just in climbing.
Oh.
Because what they decided is that these two were going to separate. And when they met again, they were going to make history by scaling the second tallest peak in the world. K2. Yes. Now it's on the border of Pakistan and Kashmir, or what was Kashmir at the time. I don't know if it's still Kashmir or what.
Okay.
I think it's still known as Kashmir, but I think it's officially something else. I'm not sure. Somebody tell me that. As of June of 2018, only 367 people had completed this ascent, which is roughly the same amount of people who climb Mount Everest every single year. And when Crowley and Eckenstein were romping around Mexican volcanoes, they decided that since no one had done it already, they were going to be the first.
That sounds like spy work to me, going into a place that doesn't have people.
Jason!
What?
It's not going to sound like spy work. It's going to sound like weird, eccentric things.
That is exactly what it sounds
exactly,
like.
Exactly. Okay. Because it's spy work. Spy work doesn't sound like spy work.
Okay.
If it does, we've completely missed the point.
Okay. I'm following.
All right.
It's going to be all right.
Is it?
I don't know. You're scaring me.
I'm scaring myself.
Perfect. I'll be quiet.
No, don't be quiet, because you're the other part of this. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to yell.
Ah, it's fine. I forgive you.
After some sexy mountain time, Eckenstein returned to London to prepare for the K2 climb, and Crowley went north, spending some time in America, specifically San Francisco, before boarding a boat to sail to Honolulu on May 3rd, 1901, about 5 months after Eckenstein had arrived in Mexico.
That doesn't make sense.
No. No, it doesn't.
I mean, there's volcanoes in Hawaii, but they're not huge mountains that you would...
No, they're pretty accessible, I think, yeah.
...climb in order to prepare for K2.
So the idea, I think, even though he doesn't necessarily state this anywhere, the way it's been reconstructed, at least, is that he essentially starts his journey to K2 and just does a lot of stuff.
Okay.
On the side.
I guess that makes more sense.
Yes. And that journey to K2 and a lot of the stuff and people that he does on the side is what we're going to talk about in our very next episode. Yes, that's right. We've come to the end of another glorious hour.
I never thought we'd get here.
Of Not Alone podcast. I never thought we'd get here either.
Perfect.
Perfect. So... Jason, what do you want to say about all of that? Say something.
Dude, it's wild, man. I don't know.
Do you think...
Again, for the first time, I'm kind of believing you.
Okay. So you do think Crowley might be a spy?
I think that the amount of reference material and his accounts probably can't be trusted to 100%.
Totally fair.
So... this is more of the myth behind the man that is forming and becoming
the myth whole. Is spycraft?
Sure.
Oh, it's one not of magic.
The conspiracy of it all.
Oh, okay. The conspiracy of it all, he says. All right. I can appreciate that. I am all sold out for this Crowley as spy.
Oh, he's
idea.
A spy guy.
Yes. And again, a great resource for this is a book called Special Agent 666.
Perfect.
Which is dope.
I respect the name.
And we'll link to that in the show notes as well if you're interested. Again, for the entire series, we've been using Aleister Crowley, the biography. I can't remember who wrote that, but again, I'll link it in the show notes. And Perdurabo. Those are our three main sources in addition to Crowley's autohagiography, which is being filtered through these because Crowley didn't write in any sort of a linear time conception sort of a way.
Perfect.
So
he was on drugs when he was writing.
All the time.
Got
so
it.
When we meet next in a week, we will be discussing, depending on time, the events exactly, completely, and ultimately before the establishment of Crowley's magical system, Thelema, through his channeling, or I suppose somebody else's channeling, of his infamous work, the Book of the Law, Do What Thou Will Shall Be the Full of the Law, or something like that. And that's what we're going to talk about in our very next episode. That journey through K2 to Thelema. So,
real black magic?
Real black magic, baby. Not next episode, but the next one after that, hopefully.
Oh, God.
We're getting there. Now, if it takes us longer, then it'll take us longer. And that's just how life happens sometimes. But in any case, who did it last time? I suppose I should say this. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Who did it last time?
I want to say I did.
Okay. Remember, whether you are infiltrating a magical organization for terrifyingly boring political reasons, or you are scaling a Mexican volcano for terrifyingly boring political reasons, you are not alone.